Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. That was a really, really good conversation all about entrepreneurial DNA. Do you have what it takes?
I love it when shows just come together and there's value added. And yeah, I'm feeling great.
That's because we had great, great guests.
As we always do.
As we always do.
And just as, yeah, what's happening right here, right now.
Exactly, exactly. But for those of you who are just joining, this show is all about us discussing, I guess the word I don't like to use all the time, unpacking all things future CEOs. And what does that really mean? The question is, are you a young, high-potential, up-and-coming executive or entrepreneur? If you are, then this is the show for you.
You said it better than me.
Not usually. If you want to be part of the show, what must you do, Libby?
You can contact us on 0861 555 189, on Twitter at cliffcentral.com or future_CEOs, and you can download Cliff Central on WeChat ID.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly. Let's get into this conversation. What are we talking about? There's a quote. Let's start with that quote, and then we'll get into the questions.
Business author and leader, is that the right quote?
That's the one.
Ziglar said, "The only thing worse than training your employees and losing them is not training them and keeping them."
Wow. Oof. That's a very, very important point. Let's quickly introduce our guests so that those who are listening know that we're talking to the right people here. Terry, we usually go with the Rose, who is always the lady, and you're looking lovely today. But Terry, we'll go with you. Please tell us who you are and what your background is, please.
Okay, my name is Terry Mayer. I'm an independent consultant. I work in the area of strategy and leadership and human capital development. I teach at various business schools. I do consulting. So that's really what I do.
That was really nice and succinct. Well, well said. But you really are the go-to guy. I mean, there are a number of different things that you have done, and we're going to draw on some of those experiences as we go through this conversation.
Cool.
Now, Musima, we're not unfamiliar with you. You're from one of our favorite organizations, Talent Africa. but you were also with us at the LeaderX event or conference,
yes,
last September at Sandton, yes, Convention Center, and you added great value there. Please just introduce yourself to our listeners who didn't hear that conversation.
Oh, thank you so much, and good afternoon to the listeners. My name is Musima Selekisho. I'm a director and partner of Talent Africa, and it's exciting to be invited to this topic because everybody speaks about retaining talent. With me, I say it doesn't matter how many times or how often you try to come up with strategies of retaining talent. If I'm looking for that good talent, I'll come after it.
Mm. Okay, very, very nice. And I think that almost echoes what we were saying off air, doesn't it, Terry? Just when we say investing employees, what's the first thing that comes to your mind, Terry? And then also, Musima, you must tell us what is it that comes to your mind first as well. Terry?
Well, I think, you know, the success of any company depends on its people. And really, it goes to that quote that you were talking about. You know, very often companies see training and development and so on as being expensive. The response to that is, what is the cost of ignorance? Mm. What is the cost of incompetence? Mm. So, you know, if you want to play in the game, you've got to develop your people. Firstly, you've got to get the right people. And second, you've got to develop those people, and you've got to give them the opportunities. And you've got to create the conditions in which they really engage with the organization. Because you certainly don't want, again, talking to that, you don't want people working for you who are totally disengaged. You actually want people to get excited about what they're doing and really add value to the business. So I think if you look at all the CEO surveys and the HR surveys that are being done by the big consulting companies, leadership, talent are always in the top three.
Mm.
That is their big concerns. Those are the challenges. And they have to try and protect their top talent from people like Musima, who's going to come and steal it.
Musima, you must come, defend yourself, please.
I'm not going to defend myself, but I'm going to respond to you. Are you done so I can respond? Okay, thank you so much. Number one, before you even talk about retaining talent, training staff, you need to create a culture,
exactly,
where everyone feels comfortable. It doesn't matter how much you train your staff or how high salaries you offer them. If they drag themselves to come to work, you're wasting your time. You'll end up paying almost your salary to every staff member, but they will never stay. You'll always have a high turnover. So the most important thing in retention of staff is in creating a good culture. I'm going to give you a practical example.
Thank you.
When I first got into search, I worked for a top company, but the culture was just not there for me.
What does that mean? So
I'm going to give you a basic example.
Yeah.
For an example, in our black culture, if my father is sick, you need to acknowledge that my dad is sick.
Mm.
But with you, your dog might be sick. You want to take it to the highest level when a dog is sick. Meanwhile, it doesn't make sense to me. So if I've created a culture that is conducive, irrespective of a father is sick or a dog is sick, we need to be accommodative and build a culture where everyone feels that much as I spend 75% of my time in this place, I'm going to give them my best because this is my second home. So companies don't build that. They sit in strategies year after year, and they pay a lot of money for you to design those strategies. It doesn't matter how many strategies you come up with. As long as the culture is not conducive, people won't stay. I left that reputable company for a startup company solely because I walked into that company for that interview. The vibe was there, and I just felt so much at home. And I said, you know, I left for such a small margin. And a lot of people that I interview, and I'm not talking about junior people, I'm talking about senior people. All of them complain about one thing: culture.
There's a very good saying that says strategy, culture eats strategy.
Very nice.
And you can have the best strategy in the world, but exactly as you say, if your culture is not right, it's not going to work. People aren't going to be engaged. People aren't going to be excited. And you will not execute your strategy. So it goes back, and where do you get culture? You get culture to a large extent from leadership. And it's the recognition by leadership of inclusive leadership, and the fact, particularly in the modern world, that you are not just in South Africa, you're working in a very diverse world, your people are very diverse, and you need to find ways of including and making people feel that they are included in the organization, they're part of the organization, and they are adding value to that.
I guess said in another way, it's really building bridges. You need the ability to build multiple bridges, not just the one. It's not just a bridge from I guess zero money to a remuneration package. It is that there's multiple areas that you must connect. The only concern that I have, Flubi, is that if we focus too much on culture, does it not feel like we are getting swallowed up by a beast that is never satisfied? Let's go there for a moment, because sometimes your employees, you know, that you just can't give them what you want, or what they want, rather.
All the time.
I mean, it's like a wife and a husband, or a girlfriend and a boyfriend, or whatever the case is. Disconnect happens because you're not filling the right need or expectation, right?
But I think, I mean, my sense is that, you know, I had the privilege of traveling on quite a number of occasions and engaging with really top global companies in Europe and the US and so on. You know, the Premier League kinds of companies. And what came across there, the light bulb for me was, what makes them successful is the quality of their leadership. And it's not just the chief executive. It's leadership culture that they build throughout the organization. So, and that leadership culture is, there's a commonality to it, but there's enough space in that to accommodate different people and their different requirements. And I always say, you know, very often what happens in organizations is talent management gets delegated or relegated to HR. Now, yes, they have a role to play, but at the end of the day, you cannot compensate for bad leadership or ineffective leadership by HR processes and policies.
Very nice.
So top companies, and South African top companies, what distinguishes them, what puts them in the Premier League, and what attracts people to them is the quality of their leadership. And they're continuously reinventing themselves. I mean, companies like Discovery, a very good example.
You know, for me, I think the only thing that has disgruntled me in the past is just personal growth. Mm-hmm. You know, I can be given, yes, Ubaba died, yes, I got the best salary, but just being stuck in something where I'm not developing to the best of my own ability and for the organizations, that's when I leave. What can you tell us about those kind of individuals who just want to grow and learn and adapt and change for themselves and for the organizations, Sissy, and you, Terry?
Thanks, but before I answer that, I just want to tap back into the issue where you said culture is like this big animal that we can never fulfill or catch.
Sure.
Look, that is why when companies appoint executives, they have to be ready to spend money to use a reputable company to assist them in attracting someone that can fill that role in its entirety. That is why if a company is looking at placing a chief financial officer, the profile is the same. He's a chartered accountant. If the person is coming from a financial services industry, they'll all have the same qualities. The only thing that is going to be a differentiator is going to be the rapport between that candidate and the panel.
Correct.
Or the company.
Correct.
So if that rapport is not there, it doesn't matter how high-flying that person is. So companies need to get that rapport when they appoint. So appointment of people in your organization is very important.
Mm. Yeah, I like that a lot. Sure. In fact, there is Lou Adler. We did an interview with him quite a long time ago, and he spoke about this. He said you develop job descriptions, not people descriptions. Mm-hmm. And so often we're too quick to develop the person, a description of the person we want, mm-hmm. when they actually don't know what kind of job or culture that they need to be fulfilling that role in. I think that's what I hear you saying here.
True.
Well, I have a view that's probably a bit contrary to some of the sort of 101 HR kind of philosophy. You know, traditional HR philosophy says you have a job description and then you take a person and you break their legs and arms and you fit them in that little box.
Yeah.
I have a different view. I mean, I think you've got to leverage people's strengths. And to some extent, you can design organizations around people, particularly in knowledge workers at higher levels. What I think is critically important is that you have a very deep conversation about what kind of person you need to take the organization into the future.
Because, to the next level, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, the people who brought the organization to the success where it is at the moment may not be the people that are going to take it to the next level of success in a different world. You may need different kinds of people. And I think the problem is that, and at the risk of being critical of some HR functions, you know, too often we have a competency list, and it becomes a tick box exercise.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. Yes.
And we haven't given sufficient thought. So, for example, if you're looking at a leadership team, and you would know better than I do, but you're looking at a leadership team, you've got to look for a new CEO. You've got to look at that total team and look at the combined skills and capabilities and relationships and chemistry. Not just at a particular job, a CFO's job or something like that. And, you know, when we get a chance, I want to talk a bit about the role of a CEO, because I think it's so critical to a company. And it's something that companies get wrong.
Ooh.
I think
that sounds juicy.
We will go there.
But
let's make sure we
question.
Go there. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Don't forget. Yes.
I want to respond to your growth question. It's a very, very critical point. You know, as headhunters, the first step that we do, we talk to what we call third-party sourcing, meaning unidentified references around you.
What do you mean?
Meaning, normally when we go look for a person, we need to attract. Remember, we're not looking for people that are looking for jobs. We after people that are doing their jobs perfectly, and we come and we sell jobs to you.
Wonderful.
So what we do is we'd get an understanding around you as to your needs. And half the time, the needs are not about salary. The needs are not about anything else. It's more about, especially for the high flyers, it's about my career growth. I feel I've reached my ceiling. I feel my direct boss, it's like 3 years older than me. And for me to get his position, he's going to have to die. So what we do is when we advise companies that are looking for people, would say to them, we've got Ruby. She's a great candidate. However, this is what excites her in a job. what are the growth aspirations around this? Because that's basically what youngsters are looking for today. Even young executives, that's what they want. You don't want to work into an organization where you're going to be like a minister of a minister without portfolio for the rest of your life.
15 years.
Yes. So they walk in, and also that even allow companies to do a proper retention strategy, because when you know that from here, this is where you're going to move, and you'll also move, and it also goes on with salary. It gives you that pie that keeps growing all the time.
Yes.
That is why you get people that work in organizations. I don't want to name organizations because my other clients would say, you didn't even mention my name.
Let's not have that happen.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm just saying, other organizations, you find that somebody joined them as an intern. From there, you get appointed full-time. The minute they find that you're a bit edgy and they know that you're a high flyer, they already have something lined up for you. Because it's more about understanding the needs of your employees. If you don't know the needs of your employees, you can't sit and decide. That's why we always say a great leader is not the person that has all the ideas. A great leader is the person that can open up opportunities for his subordinates to be creative.
Oh, love
in
it.
Empowering that company.
No, I really, really like it. But I do want to challenge something here, because I often think that, certainly from an employee perspective, there is an expectation that is created. Give me, give me, give me. And that really isn't how the talent development function should be working. You really should be proactive as an employee yourself, shouldn't you? Just some thoughts around that, please, Terry.
Well, I think it's a two-way street. If you look at top companies in South Africa and globally, they will bring in the best people. They have high expectations. They will respond to those high expectations, but you better deliver. You know, it's not for sissies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you go and work for Procter & Gamble, and they say, for example, at Procter & Gamble, they only employ graduates. So, and then they seed the rest of the organization with those very best people, but they then get transferred around the world, and they get given stretch assignments, and they get involved in projects and things like that. But they've got to deliver. You know, it is not just give, as you say. So it's a two-way street, and I think the more successful companies, they will expect a great deal, but then they'll offer a great deal.
Yes.
So that psychological contract needs to be up front, and if it's only a one-way thing, it's not going to work.
I fully agree. But I just want to attack it in a different angle, where I say, if you have subordinates that are not delivering, don't wait as if you're trapping them. As a leader, you need to be able to pick up that your car is not pulling with its full forelegs. When you wait until there's a puncture, it will affect you as well. And you're going to go the route of blaming each other unnecessarily. So you need to know what you need. And it goes back to the same thing, being able to appoint people that are relevant to what you're looking for. So that is why companies now make sure that they equip leaders in understanding performance of their subordinates.
Performance within a certain kind of context. So, I think that's what I hear you saying.
So that's why you find people that don't deliver. They tend to move them to different departments. And if you are a leader that doesn't perform, you're going to end up with a full team that is not performing. With time, that whole department will be retrenched.
When I give talks, I often ask audiences, and I say, you know, when talking about performance management and the like, how many of you go to work in the mornings planning to not perform? I haven't had anybody.
That sounds like me.
I haven't had anybody put up their hands.
Yeah.
Why? Because we all want to succeed.
Yeah.
The issue is, as Masima was saying, is you've got to find the right niche. You've got to find people and locate people in places that talk to their strengths, that get them excited, where they can perform.
Very nice.
And I think that's important.
One other thing, just to add on this, that also companies need to do to retain their staff is loyalty.
Oh, absolutely.
If you've got employees that feel that you don't value them, you don't give them that loyalty, they will leave.
Well, how do you do that, though?
Let me just give you a basic example. You have a receptionist. In your view, a receptionist answers a call, but this receptionist does everything exceptionally well. And one day she makes a single mistake. You scream, you even threaten to fire that person. You forget completely all the good things that this person has done, and you don't even acknowledge the good things they do. That on its own, I'm not even talking about loyalty of saying, can these people steal or not? I'm just talking about making them understand that
they're an asset.
They're an asset
valued
to this company.
And they recognize.
We value you.
I guess another point might be when you are promoting and you look outside the organization instead of inside of the organization. Be very careful of the perception that you're developing as a result of that kind of
very
search.
Nice,
let's, for a very, very brief moment,
very
because
nice
we're
word,
running out of time, let's talk about retention. And you used a really nice phrase in your explanation earlier, Terry, where you said seeding the organization. What does that mean, seeding the organization?
Well, what I think is important is, and I think what a lot of these top big companies do, is they bring in young graduates, they bring in highly qualified, highly effective people, and they give them opportunities within the organizations, and they challenge them, and they stretch them, and they do all those things. But they know that some people are going to leave.
Oh, they recognize the fact
they
that there is going to be
fact.
Churn.
There is going to be churn.
Yep.
But the fact is that while they're there, they get the benefit of these really clever people.
Mm-hmm.
When they leave, if they've treated them properly, they're ambassadors for that company. They've still got a pipeline of people within the organization sufficient
talent,
for their requirements,
yeah,
who are high talented.
Yeah.
And maybe in 5 years' time, they've gone and got experience elsewhere, and maybe they'll come back and bring that experience with them and add value to the company.
Which is also, I mean, the nice point there is that other people are then spending the money on their development and not you. That's quite a nice point as well for you.
Sissy, retention.
Look, it's a very broad subject because everyone talks about it, but you can never fully say, I can retain my staff. The most important thing is to do the best you can do for your company so that even if employees leave, you sit with a clear conscience as a leader to say, I did my best.
Absolutely.
I did my best. Because we can sit here and come up with the top 5 points to say to retain staff, we need to pay them well, we need to buy them uniform, we need to give them cars. They'll leave that car and they get into the how train and leave you. So the most important thing is to decide as a company to say, this is where we're going as a company. This is the vision. I shared the vision of the organization with my employees. They know where I'm going as a driver. So as passengers in this car, they know what is required of them. So if along the way, one of them decides to come out of the stop sign, there's very little I can do. I did my best.
Mm.
I invested in them. I took them to overseas trips. They'll still leave you with those overseas trips and go work for government.
I think there's pull factors and push factors,
mm-hmm,
in why people leave.
Mm.
Pull factors, you can't do anything about it. When Massima comes and offers them a fabulous, great salary, that's it. You know, that's a pull factor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's nothing you as a company can do. But there should never be push factors that or pushing people out of the company to go and look for other alternatives. So I think we must get that right.
And the push factors, you identify them with high turnover.
Yes.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Exit interviews are very important, right?
And interviews on why people stay is also very important so that you can create the culture that reinforces why people actually stay.
Very, very good point.
Stay. So to the both of you, investing in employees is not just about spending money or putting them on a course. What are some of the most effective ways you have seen leaders investing without having to spend massive amounts of money?
Now, let me quickly just jump in here. We actually have almost run out of time. So let's go 30 seconds, and then we'll bring it all together. But thank you. It's a really, really good conversation.
I just think if you look at the range of development tools that's available, for me what is becoming the most important is actually connecting people. Connecting people to knowledge and information and ideas and to other people and to communities. I think that's a hugely important factor. Then people will learn themselves.
Very nice.
In my view, allow your people to grow.
Allow them to grow.
To grow.
That's
if you decide to bottle anybody, it's never going to help. So if you have an environment that allows growth, you will always have people that are always with you.
Gareth, for me, I will stay anywhere whereby I feel loyal or valued or as an asset, excuse my English. That's why they don't keep me there. Whereby I grow and where knowledge and learning is just free for all. That's where I'll stay.
I think it's common sense, but often what seems to happen is that profits and the bottom line put so much pressure on managers and leaders that sometimes we forget some of these common sense things that we experienced when we were in organizations and in maybe some junior positions as well. We want to have the conversation around CEOs and what they do, so Terry, we will have you back.
Excellent, great.
Mosima, thank you for joining us. Your contribution has been hugely valuable.
Spirit fire, woman, spirit fire.
And it really, really has been. Klubi, it's always good to see you, always good to be with you, and again, what an educational
what
show
we had.
What
a great hour. Thank you so much. Thank you to our esteemed guests. Thank you so much.
All right. We will be back same time, same place next week. By the way, we also have just launched an ebook which is called Now Hiring, How to Hire Your First Employee. And that's all for startups. I think it goes hand in hand with this conversation. We'll chat about that soon as well. See you next week.
This is CliffCentral.com.